This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Hello, and welcome back to Blockbuster Backrooms. Excited to say that this is our first episode for 2022. And we're kicking it off with a banger. And that's not Friday the 13th. I know we promised we'd come back to it, and we will, but we're thinking next week when we can get drunk while we watch the films. Instead, I am joined tonight by my friend Matt.
Hey, yeah.
And we are going to be talking Itchy the Killer, which is a J-horror. And honestly, it's across a lot of media, but we're mainly going to be focusing on the live-action movie that got released in 2001. Ooh, birth year movie. So, Itchy the Killer is directed by Takashi Miike, and the screenplay is by Sakichi Sato. And it's based on the mangas and stuff by Hideo Yamamoto.
Yep.
Look, I butcher a lot of names, but I think I did those ones okay.
Yeah, they were pretty good. I do the same.
Yeah, it's hard. Names are hard. So, really quick rundown of the movie. We follow kind of like two main characters. You have Kakihara and you have Ichi. And Kakihara's just like cool Yakuza gang guy who likes to fuck people up, but he also really likes getting fucked up.
Yeah, and that's a good description.
Yeah, and his boss goes missing, so he's spending pretty much all of the movie trying to find his boss. Well, he is hunted by Ichi, who is basically just a crybaby killer.
Yeah,
and their paths end up intersecting, and honestly, I kind of wish they kissed. They'd make a really great power couple. Yeah.
They would. They'd make a scary one.
Absolutely.
For real.
Because, like, this film is just full of so much sexual tension.
Oh, yeah.
Because you
definitely
had, yeah, you got, like, the entire reason Kakihara is looking for his boss is pretty much just because the boss of his gang was one of the only people able to inflict the correct amount of pain that he could get off.
Yeah.
And the entire movie, Ichi's just, like, struggling with the fact that he gets off to, like, people being abused, and he wants to, like, abuse people.
Yeah. So it's basically a kind of messed up, I wouldn't say love story, but in the manga it is, between a sadist and a masochist trying to find each other.
Yeah, yeah.
In a messed up way. In a really messed up way.
And
yeah.
I don't know. For what it is, it's kind of wholesome.
It is kind of, yeah. And it's really weird. Do you want me to give a little bit of, like, weird history to
yeah,
what happened
bro.
When this movie came out?
Hit me.
This movie came out in 2001, and back then it kind of became a cult hit because it was banned in three countries.
True.
Which I believe was, let me see here, it was Norway, Germany, and I think Taiwan, from what I remember.
Yo, that's
and,
wild.
Yeah, and in the UK it had about 3 minutes cut down from its normal runtime, and so it gained this sort of real kind of scary, like reputation for being really, like, messed up and gross. And because
yeah.
this was the 2000s when, like, people couldn't watch movies as easily as they can now.
Yeah,
a
yeah.
lot of people were scrambling to find copies of this movie, of the uncut version.
Yeah.
So it became this really legendary thing. And I think at the premiere they handed out, like basically, like, their own version of, like, bath bags for the movie to, like, market on the whole, like, scariness about it.
I fucking love that. I wish
yeah.
I got, like, an Itchy the Killer bath bag. Let's go.
I know, right? It's crazy. So it has a reputation. It's
yeah.
funny. It's funny now because this movie came out before Saw and before a lot of those sort of hostel-type beat
yeah.
movies. So this, I wouldn't say if you watch it now, like, it's kind of tame.
Oh, but absolutely.
When it came out, though, I feel like it was a little bit more different to what people had seen before. So a lot of the older critics and people who watched it were like, oh my God. Yeah, this man did this. Especially, like, I don't know, you don't see too many movies where the main character who's kind of dressed up like a superhero and kind of has this whole thing of, like, being a superhero, basically has an erection why he, like, goes around killing people with his spike boots.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty, like, out there.
I don't know. It is wild. I managed to... So the website I found the manga on only had volume 10, so I only got to read the very, very end.
That's fair.
Which, honestly, I'm excited to read the full thing now that you've sent me links to it. But from what I saw, I fucking love it.
And it's great.
I'm really disappointed that Kakehara is, like, not hot at all in the manga.
In the manga, like, I like his design, but he's not the main guy. He's not the main actor. He's not, like, a weird, like, aesthetic fashion icon. He's just kind of what a Yakuza boss would have looked like back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's menacing, but yeah, he's kind of a nightmare. Like, all the characters in the manga, like, have a certain way they're drawn that is kind of, like, really scary.
You know what it actually kind of reminds me of?
What?
The early artworks of Baki.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's got a very similar feeling and flow to it. But I think the difference is more that they're focusing in the manga to bring out the fact that these guys are, like, fucking wild, whereas in Baki they're like, these guys are wild in the sense that they're so strong. So look at the muscles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's this. Then the manga, it's more like to make it everything kind of seem kind of uncanny and, like, uncomfortable.
And it works really well.
It does. Yeah. The interesting thing about the movie is a lot of the most violent scenes in the movie are left up to your imagination. Like, there's messed up stuff they show you, but for the most part, the really gross stuff happens explicitly in the manga. Like, if you get disappointed watching this movie, read the manga, read the comic, and you'll see everything you're missing out on.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Where's the movie? Yeah.
I do have to admit. So, basically, it takes place mainly in this apartment complex. At least, like, the end half is definitely, you don't really leave the area. And, you know, Kakehara has his, like, gang headquarters there in this, like, really fancy room with his little stuffed alligators and shit. But I realized, because this is probably my third or fourth time watching the film, and I laughed really, really hard when he walks into his entire, like, gang having been dismembered. Because this is like the second, third time his like gang headquarters has just been absolutely, like, covered in gore and viscera.
Yeah, legit. And he's just like, oh yeah, awesome! I can't wait to get beaten, brutally murdered by Ichi.
I know. He goes. He goes on, like, the little story of how he's like, he's got to time it perfectly, because if he waits too long, then, like, he's going to get scared, and then he's not going to look forward to it. But if it happens too quickly, well, he's not actually prepared to die. He just wants to feel pain. So it has to, happen at just the right time.
Exactly. It's funny, because that's kind of where the manga and the movie change. Because in the manga, this is kind of a spoiler, but he pretty much discovers that, oh yeah, this guy is actually kind of scary. This guy's way too scary. I messed this up. I shouldn't have been going after this guy. Whereas in the movie, he finds out that, oh, this guy's just kind of a loser, really.
Yeah, bro. In the movie, Ichi's actually just really pathetic.
Yeah, he doesn't have much sympathy. Like, he has a little bit of sympathy, but in the manga, Ichi's kind of a main character.
Yeah, yeah.
And he gets a lot more backstory, and he's still crazy, but you kind of understand him a little bit more.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you kind of, yeah, you find out why he has spike boots. Because
true.
He builds them in the factory that he works from. So
yeah.
A lot of little details.
Damn, you know, I never even like questioned where or how he got those. I was just like, oh, cool, knife boots.
Yeah, me neither. Because the movie's so crazy. The movie has this, for the viewers listening, the movie has this insane style of editing and presenting itself where it's just like super kinetic and fast, and then it slows down and it speeds up.
Yeah.
And they have this crazy soundtrack by this band called The Boredoms, which is like a really crazy like noise punk band. So it's just like, it's, I don't know, it's, you have to kind of watch it to experience the sort of movie this is.
Yeah, it's got some really wild like directing choices, because you're right,
yeah.
it does speed up and slow down quite erratically.
Yeah.
Because I think during this watch, I'd be watching shit and I'd be like, damn, that's right, this movie's really slow. This was kind of how I built myself into being able to watch like slow burn horror and just slow burn films in general. And then once stuff starts happening, it doesn't really stop. And you're like, oh, shit, here we go.
Legit. It does not let up. It kind of slows down, but it kind of, it's a weird mixture of how it shows it. It's really interesting. And the way they like, the places they find to like shoot in this movie are so crazy too.
Yes.
They all feel like an antique shop with just like stuff piled upon them and like a maze. Some of them feel like really gross and like grimy, and others feel like really weird and gaudy.
Yeah. It's definitely kind of a lot to take in. And while all of that is happening, the entire film just kind of has like a, not like a fuzzy overlay, but it feels dusty. It feels like the camera is dusty.
It feels grimy. It feels like an old like movie from the 2000s.
Yeah.
Like it feels really like, there's a certain filter and I don't know much about cameras and movie making, but there's definitely a certain look it has of that era.
Absolutely.
That just makes it feel like, it feels weird. It feels really weird.
And the camera cuts were really interesting, because before we got on here, we were talking like the censorship stuff. And I was like, oh, so if I've cut scenes in the movie, does that explain the really fucking wild, janky shots? Is like that just director's choice? And you told me it was director's choice, which it's so insane to me, because they're really,
really
strange
funny.
Choices.
They are. Like, one of my favorite parts of this movie, and it's like a part that no one really ever talks about, but it just makes me laugh every time, is that there's this one Yakuza boss who always walks into the meetings of Kakahara. I don't know what his name is, but he's like this really short little guy with like an hourglass.
And he like falls over. He can't stand up.
Yeah, whenever he moves, they add these like weird creaking sound effects. And he just like, there's these weird little choices by the director like that. They just make it so, like little scenes so funny.
Yeah, and to be honest, the first like one or two times I saw the film, I was like, oh, that guy, he's really old. He's like ancient. That's why he can't stand up. But then on this watch, when I was watching it, I was like, hold on a minute. That guy's not old at all. Like, maybe middle age?
Legit. He's like, he just appears for a few scenes. And I think my favorite one is like when Kakihara goes to, Kakihara does some bad shit and he has to make up for it by basically doing the old Yakuza like cut off like a limb, and he decides to cut off his tongue.
Yeah, except they don't even ask him to. They're just like, oh hey, so you brutally tortured this guy in our game.
Yeah.
So like, do you want to give us like $3 million to make up for the fact you ruined this man's life? And he's like, no. You're like, all right, well, why don't you hand over the like video sales and all the video shit? And he's like, no. And they're like, oh, well, we got to come to a decision. And he just stands up and he's like, grabs the knife. And they're like, yo, cutting off your fingers isn't going to be enough to like repay for what you've done. And he's like, nah, bro, I got a taste for sweet things. So I'm going to like, bam. And then he just slices his tongue off.
Yeah, he just goes for it.
he's it, like, it,
This is in the middle part. This is like at the very beginning of the movie too.
Oh, it's so like, early on.
this isn't like other movies where this sort of like thing happens at the very end. This is like right at the beginning. I always forget that.
Yeah.
And he does it, and then like the funniest part about that scene to me, this is just me, yeah, where like he does it and everyone, all these big like gruff, like real, like mean Yakuza bosses are just, they're just frozen. They don't know what to do. And he's just like, okay, I'm going to walk off now.
Yeah.
And he walks off and no one stops him. And then the boss falls over and they'll go, oh, boss.
It's the funniest shit. And yeah, honestly, because I was going to bring this up, this happens so much throughout the film.
Yeah. Is,
like, Kakehata would just do some of the most batshit, like, pain-inducing crap. And everyone watches him in just fucking absolute shock. And then everyone's just too scared to even stand near him as he just, like, casually walks out of the room.
Yeah, to him it's like nothing. He just goes about his day. And
yeah.
He's just super chill about it. And he has, like, two police officer twins
who follow him around.
Yeah, they're, like, they're absolutely vile in the manga. Like, they are awful people in the manga.
You sent me a screenshot of what they look like in the manga, and I was they actually look terrifying. Like,
they
wouldn't want to see them.
They are so scary, and they are like some of the meanest. From what I remember, this is like a little while ago, but from what I remember, they're like the meanest characters in the manga.
Oh yeah,
in the movie, like they're awful people, but they're so like nonchalant about everything.
They're funny.
Yeah,
they feel like comic relief. Like is it Jiro? I can't remember.
Jiro, yeah.
Yeah, he like puts on the little animal ears and he's like, time for like Sleuth Dog Jiro to get into the game. And he just starts like sniffing the chick's pussy to find out where this guy is. And I'm like, what is happening? What are you doing?
And then the next shot is of like the dude they're chasing, like, sitting in his apartment alone, and he hears, like, someone barking outside his window, and he's like, what is that? And he just opens the window, and it's just Jiro sitting there with these dog ears on, chasing after him. It's so bizarre. It's great.
I they're definitely probably, like, my favorite characters in the film.
Yeah.
Like, Kakehata is obviously best boy,
yeah,
but they're pretty much on par with him because they make me giggle so much.
Every time, like, one of the dudes is just like, I wonder if I can pull your arm off, because they kidnapped this one dude, they're trying to get information from.
Longy.
Poor Longy. And he just, like, these guys are, like, kind of short, like, they're not big, muscly dudes, they're just kind of, like, normal dudes. In the most strangest clothing you've ever seen, with like safety pins like tied to like these really raggedy like trench coats.
And they each have, they look exactly the same except for a little flower of a different color pinned to their trench coats. It's so cute.
It is. The fashion in this movie is crazy, I swear.
Bro, like, it's so good.
Like, the costume designer, I forgot their name, but they did, everything looks so crazy. It's hard to describe.
Yeah.
A lot of it is just, like, really gaudy, like, clothes that someone, like, decided, yo, put this on. It's like someone went to, like, some sort of, like, sale somewhere and just threw a bunch of shit on.
But it all looks really good in the film.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it looks amazing.
If I saw someone walking down the street in the exact same outfit, I'd be like,
yeah,
bro, what are you doing? But in this film, I'm like, yes!
I can live
it up! I want to look like you!
Yeah, same. It looks amazing. It looks so good. It's so odd. Like, there's a scene... Here's the thing about this movie. There's scenes where, like, shit will happen, and it's from the manga. Like, the movie follows the manga quite thoroughly.
Yeah.
They just do weird shit with it. Like, there's a part where they, there's a gang thing. I haven't brought this part up.
Yeah.
For people who are listening, at the same time as this battle between Kakehara and Itchy is kind of taking place, and they're like killing each other's like little crews, there's a group of ex-Yakuza sort of like hitmen who do like odd jobs who are perpetrating this whole series of like events.
Yeah.
And the guy who is running it, the guy who is the leader is called Gigi, which is a slang in Japanese for old man or like old codger. even though the guy who's playing him is like in his 30s or like 40s. And a fun fact for everyone out there, the guy who plays Gigi is actually the director of Tetsuo the Iron Man.
Oh, true!
Yeah, Shinya Sakamoto, I think is his name.
Oh, and he's, shit!
Yeah, he's the guy who plays Tetsuo, I think. He plays the villain in Tetsuo the Iron Man.
Yeah.
And he's also the director, and he's kind of like a weird little dude who pops up in like a lot of Japanese movies, and when you see him, it's like, oh, it's that dude.
That's crazy. I gotta admit, I will never not fucking lose it when he has the showdown with the bodyguard, because he's like, you're not worth Itchy's time, and then he takes off his trench coat, and he's just like bodybuilder buff under there.
He rips it off, and he's like super swole. And he just, like, he grabs the bodyguard's head and twists it.
And
like this short little dude who's just, like, an old guy who looks more like a dude who, like, runs things from behind the scenes the entire movie.
Yeah.
Just out of nowhere, in the middle of all this action at the very end of the movie, rips off this and just goes, like, bonkers with it.
Yeah, and then he, like, doesn't just, like, he snaps the dude's neck, but then he throws the body at the door later in the movie, and they all come out because they're like, what was that? And, like, the body's just been snapped all over.
Because, yeah, that's right.
Because the twins are like, oh my gosh, look at this, and they're, like, poking it, and they're like, this is impressive work. Even Big Brother, like, Hedo couldn't do this. And he's like, watch your mouth, boy.
They're constantly bickering. It's so funny. And, like, people keep on ending up dead at their doorstep, and no one really gives a shit. No one gives a shit apart from, I think his name is Kaneko, who is the other bodyguard who's kind of a main character who has a young son called Takeshi, and he's like the straight man of this whole movie. He's like the most normal person. He was an ex-cop who lost his gun, who is now with the Yakuza, and you kind of get a little bit of backstory about him, and he has a lot of, he has a lot of loyalty to this awful, scary, terrifying gang.
He's
like the most wholesome character, and he's great.
He does have a bit of a breakdown, though, which is, like, they have to torture one of the chicks from the whorehouse to find out where Longy is. And when they leave, they send him inside with the only other bodyguard that's still hanging around. To go and make sure that nothing happens to her. And he asks her if she wants a glass of water, but, you know, this chick's been, like, seriously fucked up.
She's not in good shape.
No, she's so out of it. All she can mutter is about how, like, sorry she is for outing where Longy is. When, to be fair, she never actually did. Good old Jetto just, like, knew the smell.
Exactly.
But he ends up getting really, really mad, and so he beats the shit out of her, and she actually ends up dying.
I forgot about that. I always forget about that, because it kind of comes out of nowhere.
And then it doesn't go into why he's lost it. I'm guessing because, you know, all of the fucking shit that he's had to go through in the past, like, 2 days. But then, like, it's also one of the only bodies that they air that anyone's ever just like, that's inconvenient, because Itchy comes back. Oh, not Itchy, Kakihara comes back, and he's like, can you stop getting in my fucking way? He's like, why is she dead?
I know, right? It's like the only person. Kakihara is a very strange one. He's a really weird one. Oh, yeah. The reason, this is really random, but the reason why that little dude, Gigi, is so ripped
is
in the manga, that actually happens, and there's actually build-up to it.
Oh, true.
Because he's in the manga, Gigi is constantly, like, injecting himself with, like, I think it's testosterone or, like, some sort of, like, steroids.
Oh, so is that...
Yeah.
That will be what he was injecting into his booty in, like, the epilogue. Because I was like, what is that, like a diabetes shot?
No. That's a good guess. No, from what I understand, it's, like, testosterone. And apparently he's had, like, this is, like, a thing they say at the very end of the manga when he kills the other bodyguard.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm actually 30 years old and I've had plastic surgery. So he's, like, this weird, like,
young, I don't even know what he man.
Is. Yeah, I don't know what he is, but he's just like, you think you know who this guy is, and he's just like this bizarre, like,
I
chameleon
mean,
of a person.
To be fair, as someone who's like working gang shit, to make yourself look really old is kind of a really good power move, because everyone's like, oh, this old man can't do shit. We'll just like, we'll slap him and his hips will break. When in reality, he's like 20 and he'll beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, legit. Legit. It's crazy. It's absolutely nuts.
You definitely get to see a lot more of him in the manga, even in just like the last volume I read, which gave some insight on more of his motivations, because I feel like in the movie, he's not really doing any of it for a reason. There's no motive given, which, like, it's fine. I don't care. I don't need my characters to have any real motives. I just want to watch the pretty men fight.
But it would have been nice. I've always thought the same thing, like, just one little, like, reason.
Yeah.
Because in the movie, there's, like, a DVD translation that says he's an ex-cop. But they never mention that ever in the movie, so I'm guessing that's a mistranslation.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, in the movie, they don't talk about it, but in the manga, I think he, like, wants to just, like, clean up the city, from what I understand. Because, he's just sick of the Yakuza.
Because I only saw, like, the last few panels in the epilogue.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how it's nice to finally have, like, the apartment clean and just filled with, like, pigs, which was really funny.
Yeah.
Well, he's like, it's clean, but I don't respect the people that are living there now.
Yeah. It's kind of... He's a wild character.
Yeah, yeah.
He's super wild. Yeah, in the manga, they don't necessarily give you an explicit reason, but there's a lot more motivation for why he's doing it, and you get to spend way more time with him.
Also, you see him take it... Actually, this is a really, really interesting one, because in the movie, at the end, once everyone's died, Shinji hangs himself. He's just hanging in the tree. But,
do you want to know some... Oh, yeah, you keep going.
Okay, but in what I saw from the manga, he's just like, cool, shit worked out. 3 years later, Ichi's no longer of use. Ichi's, like, become a normal person. But he more or less adopted the son of the bodyguard he killed.
Yeah.
And he's like, I will reform this kid into my new Ichi because I need a new killer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legit. And so the movie has, like, I don't know, the ending to this movie is something that confuses a lot of people for good reason, because it's very sped up. It's very sped up and it happens very fast. And
it does.
I can speak to kind of what I think happens and what a lot of people have probably, it's not necessarily, so what I've always taken away from it is, like, basically in this version, Kakihara finds that Ichi isn't really this cool mega sadist dude that he's been, like, dreaming of. He finds that Ichi is just kind of a really pathetic, twisted kind of person who's kind of, like, extremely, I don't know, he's not what he was expecting.
Yeah, yeah.
And after this, he basically commits suicide, and the movie tricks you and makes you think that, oh, Ichi actually is badass, because there's one scene where Ichi runs at Kakihara and stabs him after Kakihara has, like, stabbed his ears out.
Yeah.
Which is a lot, is it quite a hell of a sentence to say. But what happens is Gigi, like, walks in and finds Kakihara's body at the bottom of the apartment complex. And he's, like, smiling, and he's like, oh, hell yeah. My boy Ichi has done the work.
Yeah.
But then he, like, looks at his head, and you can see the mark that was left by Ichi a few scenes ago is not there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the implication is, oh, shit, Ichi's dead. Ichi's been basically killed by, like, a 10-year-old who's the son of bodyguard.
Oh, that reminds me. I'll let you finish, but I have something to say about that.
Oh, yeah, sure thing. Ichi's been killed by a 10-year-old. And the last scene, although it is very fast, and it confused the hell out of me the first time I watched it, is of Takeshi, who is the bodyguard's son, walking away with a bunch of school children with, like, the crows that he was feeding before.
Yeah.
And Gigi, like you said, Gigi's body hanging, so there's, like, an insinuation that Gigi's been killed, and kind of the same ending as the manga, like, Takeshi might become Might become another itchy, essentially.
All right, I'm going to share what I thought ending was showing, but we will quickly take a break. We will be right back after this.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.
And welcome back to Blockbuster Backrooms. Tonight, me and Matt are talking about Ichi the Killer, and we just left off on Matt saying, like, his piece on how he interpreted the end of the movie. And to be honest, my interpretation is pretty much similar.
But
for me, I want to mention, because for, like, the past few days, Kakihara has just been going so fucking hard for Ichi. And once he, like, the just utter fucking disappointment from realizing that Ichi's just kind of this pathetic loser who was never really doing any of this through choice. Kind of, like, breaks his psyche a little bit.
Because it definitely does.
He tries so hard for so long to get this guy to, like, stand up and fight him, which, to be honest, is kind of really goofy and funny. And
it's goofy but kind of sad, too.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely one of the saddest scenes. So you're feeling, like, this really strange mix of emotions because you kind of want to laugh at how goofy it is, but you're like, this is really sad.
It goes on for so long, and it... the whole movie builds to this climax for both, like, Kakihara and the movie, and then you get to that point, and it's
it
this,
never,
like,
happens.
It's very purposeful in that way, and it's funny because of how crazy the rest of the movie is, and it just kind of ends there.
There's no big showdown.
No.
And then, you know, the little kid runs up because Ichi killed his dad, and he saw.
Yeah.
Because Ichi slits his dad's throat when his dad won't put the gun down. And the kid ends up running up to Ichi, who got shot in the leg when he slit the dad's throat. And he just starts, like, kicking him.
Yeah.
And the scene goes on for a little bit. And this is where I want to put my 2 cents in. Because when I was watching this, I was like... How long would it take a kid to beat, like, a fully grown man to death?
I was thinking the same thing.
Because I feel like even for adults fighting adults, beating someone to death is not, like, an easy task. You'd have to be at it for, like, a decent amount of time. And this is just a little 10-year-old. It's your little kid.
It's kind of left ambiguous for that reason. But, like, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, okay, if he's dead, how long would that take? Because, he's a pretty small kid. Like,
He's not very old.
Yeah, either Ichi's going to maybe die of blood loss, maybe, from the bullet,
maybe,
if he doesn't get any help, or the kid grows up and kills him later. Either way, it's
possibly.
Either way, his story is left bookmarked by getting beaten up by a 10-year-old. Which is a hell of a way to end.
And I think... Kakihara, you know, he's just watching this 10-year-old beat Ichi up. And that's when he's just like, fuck it, and he pulls out the needles.
Exactly,
Because, like, his signature thing is he has these huge fuck-off needles that he uses on people. And he's just like, I don't even know what he's thinking. He just starts, like, pushing them into his head. And you get this really bad CGI of them, like, going into his eardrums and shit, which is, for as terrible as it is, it definitely made me cringe, because I was like...
Yeah, same.
I've heard of people having their eardrums, like, pop, and apparently it's the most painful fucking shit.
Yeah.
So I was like, this guy's just going at it with, like, these needles.
It's gnarly.
And the audio gets really weird, which I love it when audio plays into stuff like this.
Yeah.
And then it all just cuts out because he's like, he can't hear anymore. And I think that's the point where his sanity is like fully snapped off. I mean, Everything after that for him is just a hallucination.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's like when he like hallucinates like his happy ending.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not. He does not have a happy ending. And that never happens.
No, I think he purposely throws himself off the building. But in his head, he's imagining he failed winning against Ecchi.
Exactly. But, because he can't picture anything else.
Yeah.
His
whole
life, all of his like. He's lost his boss, Angel, who was like the only person who could like beat him up enough to make him feel alive. And he's put all his like worth into Ecchi, like all of his energy into Ecchi.
Because this man has fucking lost everything. He's lost his lover. He's lover in quotation marks.
Yeah.
He's lost his entire gang. Yeah, everyone's been slaughtered, so he has no gang to go back to. To do anything with.
Yeah, he's been kicked out of the gang, too.
Yeah, he got kicked out of a gang, so he doesn't even have any source of income at this point.
No.
Because there's no, like, pawn sales or anything. So,
no.
Like, this, Ecchi was, like, the last thing he was clinging to, and he got disappointment from it. Because it wasn't what he thought it would be. So this poor man just fucking throws himself off, and in his, like, his off-his-face state, he's so happy. So even though he dies because of his sadness, he dies happy.
Yeah, he dies somewhat happy.
Yeah, because as he's falling, he's like, he's so happy. He's like, this is the best I've ever felt. Yes.
Yeah.
And then,
boom.
And then, I wasn't really sure why Gigi hung himself. My guess with this was that, like, he hung himself because his goals was just to, like, get rid of the guys in this apartment block. And he's an old man. What else does he have to do?
Yeah.
And then I never realized that the kid was the little boy.
It's hard to see.
So now that you've explained that, I think pretty much my viewing of it is going to line up exactly with yours.
Yeah.
And I do...
I remember being really confused by that, and the whole reason why you can tell it's the little boy is because this is kind of goofy, but you can tell because he's wearing the exact same outfit he was wearing when he was beating Ecchi on the rooftop. He's got the coat and the jacket. So for some reason he's wearing the same outfit he did when he was like 10 years old and he's grown up now. And it's a bit goofy, but it's to kind of show you, oh, that's the same kid. So there's like an implication that, oh, he's killed. He's pretty much either killed Gigi.
Oh, wait. So it's the guy that turns around the kid.
Yeah, the guy who turns around.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I imagined it totally wrong. I thought you meant like he was running with the school children and Ecchi was the one walking behind him. Because I thought that was Ecchi who turns around.
Oh. It kind of does look like Ecchi. No, yeah. He's wearing the same outfit as, I forgot the kid's name. What's his? Takeshi. Takeshi is the son.
In that case, I'm gonna go with, like, Takeshi has basically just gotten his revenge. He's killed Gigi and hung him from a tree.
Idea.
And, I mean, I'm going to say he killed Ecchi on the rooftop, even though a 10-year-old beating a man to death is a really...
it is very funny. It's something that works for this movie.
Yeah.
And when I explain this, like, now, it, like, people might be listening to this and they might be like saying, like, oh, that sounds really obvious. But when you watch the movie, it's very, this last ending sequence is very fast compared to the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And if you watch it for the first time, you're probably going to be left like saying, what the fuck just happened there? Unless you really slow it down.
To be honest, the entire film is a really big, like, what the fuck is happening?
It is.
What is going on?
You have to watch it a few times and maybe even, I don't know, watch it a few times and maybe read the manga too, because the manga is very obvious. The manga just tells you everything.
Yeah, honestly, even though I just read the very end, it explained a lot of random little things that I thought were just strange choices. Like, in the manga... the chick that gets the hots for Kakihara is portrayed in a very, like, Western look. She's got blonde hair, and she's just very Westernized. And I was like, well, that explains why in the movie she keeps jumping in and out of English.
Yeah, she does it a lot.
Because I think she's meant to be, like, a Westerner.
That would make sense.
From
what I've seen, yeah, that would make sense.
And obviously you get to learn more about like Gigi's motivations.
Yeah. You get a bigger sense of like Itchy too. Itchy's still an awful person, but you understand why he's doing what he's doing.
Mm.
And one of the biggest differences in the manga is that Itchy is actually kind of a badass.
Yes.
In a sense.
I noticed that right away.
Yeah, like Itchy still cries when he gets angry because that's his whole thing, but he murders everybody. Like he does, this manga ends in a very different way to the movie. It's like the exact opposite of instead of Kakehara getting what he wants, not getting what he wants, he gets what he wants and a little bit too much of what he wants.
I swear to God, I love the fact the manga just goes so hard with it too. There's a scene where she's like sliced up and everything seems okay, but then Kakehara's pants fall down and you're like, oh, okay, cut through the belt. And then all of his clothes come off and you're like, okay, so we cut through all the clothes and you see like the shibari shit and his like he is so hard under all that. And then you see all of the ropes start to undo and you're like, oh. And then it's like, ha ha, his dick got chopped in half. And there's like a few panels where he's gotten really horny because of it and it's hurting him more. So he's like he's getting harder, but then that's hurting him more. And it's like this little loop. And I was like, what?
The manga, if you think this movie is like
tame.
If you watch this movie and think it's tame, the manga, like, it throws everything at you. The manga, I like to describe the manga as like every sort of like intrusive thought you might have like packaged into a manga. So you'll be reading it, you'll be like, oh wow, this is kind of gross. I bet it's not going to get grosser. And they keep one-upping each other.
Yeah.
And it gets wild, and that's like a taste of the end of the, what you just said there is a good example of how it keeps getting crazier.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way Kakehara dies in the manga is really funny and just crazy.
I know. It also made me wonder, in the manga, does Takeshi feed pigeons instead of crows?
I think he might do. That might be a plot point.
Because
I know the pigeon, yeah.
Yeah, the pigeon poops on Kakehara's finger and it makes him lose his grip. And I was like, in the movie it's crows, but I feel like a random pigeon for no reason is a bit strange, so I took the assumption that like the kid had been eating the pigeons.
That, I need to read it again. That could be a plot point, or that could just be Hideo being crazy, because that is a very funny way for like this crazy mob boss to die, just to get shit on by a pigeon. And he's like, oh shit, my grip goes. It's like, I'm surprised that wasn't in this movie, because that's something Mikke would definitely do, because
it would have been wild.
Yeah, I've seen Mikke's other movies that he made before and after this movie, and there's a bunch of them. There's City of Lost Souls, there's one called Fudo, The Next Generation. A lot of, like, weird movies, and they all have this similar energy to this movie.
Cool.
Like, there's scenes where there's, like, there's one movie where there's, like, a lady who shoots blow darts out of her crotch, and she's, like, an assassin. And, like, just crazy stuff like that that happens for no reason.
Yeah.
There's, like, a weird CGI chicken fight in one of them. And, like, a Beyblade machine. Like, it's crazy. So, like, he has, like, a distinct way of making movies from this era. That was a way he made movies in this era. And Itchy the Killer is kind of, like, all of that put into one movie.
So you get this
really bizarre thing, yeah.
Oh, it's, like, It's an enjoyable bizarre. I do know I've had like a love-hate relationship with this film though.
I remember
as a kid, the first time I watched it, because I think I got it off the shelf when I was like 13.
Yeah, true.
I loved it because I rated movies on what they were willing to show. Like this film compared to like your generic average Western film goes really hard, where you're like, look what he's done to this man, pouring hot oil on his back and shit like that. And I was like, oh, this fucking slaps. And then I remember rewatching it with my ex, who's like a film major, And he wasn't very into it. And I was like, oh, this movie kind of sucks. But now that I've like rewatched it for the third, fourth time,
yeah.
I've decided I like it because it's kind of bizarre and some of it doesn't make sense. But that's why it's enjoyable.
Legit. I've had the same experience where I watched it. I watched it on, I think it was Christmas Day 3 years ago.
True.
Which is a weird time to watch it on. And it was such a bizarre, like, just like amount of things being thrown at you that I just loved. I think I loved I love everything about it, but I love the weird sort of dark humor that it just throws at you the most, and its style. And I keep coming back. Like, I used to tell people, oh, this was like one of my, this was a movie that I always cracked me up. And people would look at me and be like, what, this movie made you laugh? Because I part of me always forgot about like the most like really like, I don't know, you could say uncomfortable scenes in this movie.
Yeah.
Because this is a movie that is based off of Ichi the Killer. And although it doesn't show you everything from the manga, it does show some of the more abusive scenes, which I get people, it's a weird thing to jump from that abuse to like really funny shit, but that's kind of the whole point of this movie. So yeah, obviously not something for everybody.
No, definitely not. If you have stuff against like rape and just abuse in general, I'd stay away from this film.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal when it comes to that.
But I do agree, the film's actually really funny.
Yeah, it's weird because I feel like it's a purposeful thing where it shows you this like horrible shit and then it just gets like darkly funny. Like it's constantly it's throwing so much at you and you don't know how to respond
like,
to it essentially.
Like when the gang's getting massacred by Ichi. It doesn't show what's happening. It shows the blood flying around. But then you see one of the faces, like just a whole ass face slap against the wall and slide down. And I was like, it's fucking funny you spared CGI face. Like, it was good shit.
It's so cartoony. It's so cartoony and weird, and it knows it's cartoony and weird.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so funny that at the time it got so much, like, it got so much censorship. I mean, it makes sense on a certain degree, but also
what's interesting is I feel like maybe not so much anymore, but at the time this was this would have been treated the same as like a Serbian film or Salo or anything, where it's like the type of film where everyone knows the name if you've looked up like most fucked up films.
That's the list. Yeah,
but the difference is Itchy's actually good.
Yeah, it is good. It is. It's a fun movie. And I think one of the things that, God, what was I saying? We were talking about, one of the reasons why I think it was, I think I've talked about this before. The reasons why it was targeted so heavily in that time was because, there were violent movies at that time that were available in Western countries. But I think it was the first one that really started to show, like, it wasn't afraid of showing, like, the weird BDSM, like kind of sexual aspect to it, where, like, because you have movies where it's like, oh, this guy is a sadist, and they'll say that, but you don't, nothing really happens.
No,
but
it's in this movie, like, he likes hurting people.
Yeah, but in this movie, it's like, no, Ichi is a sadist, he is hard while he kills these people.
Look at him grab his heart on as he like stands over the murdered guy who was just abusing and raping this chick.
It's like one of the first movies, at least I think, that came to the West outside of Japan that was like not afraid of showing that. And because of that, people were like, oh no.
And that's actually something I agree with. For a genre that's kind of known for having a lot of unneeded sex scenes, anything that actually touches on anything sexual past vanilla missionary and titties on screen is instantly kind of taboo, which is really interesting. And then on top of that, I think if it has brutality against women, it gets censored a lot faster too.
Definitely.
Because we were talking about the scenes that got censored in a few parts, and you said the scenes where the chick gets her tits cut and the scene where
whenever they show her body,
and when like Jetto sniffs her no-no square to find out where Wongy is, that got cut, which really surprised me.
Yeah, that surprised me too, because that's like, I think it was just because of her mutilated body. It must have been like a bias from the censors back then.
Yeah.
But it's funny because it's like, obviously it's showing her body.
Yeah.
But it's not showing them torturing her, but obviously they decided anything showing the aftermath of it was cut, which was really interesting. It's funny to me because, obviously you have a lot of awful scenes in this movie, but they're not cut as much as that scene was.
And it's interesting to see that one was cut, but the scenes of, like, the husband abusing his wife and raping her didn't get cut.
Yeah, they did get cut.
They were still
in the movie.
Yeah.
But I watched it last night because I have a DVD that's cut.
Yeah.
That's not uncut. And they cut down a tiny part of it where they show you the beginning of it and the end of it when Itchy walks in to stop them.
But none of the in-between?
There's a certain part at the start where they don't show him, like, beating her and like abusing her, which is interesting.
Seems really fucking brutal, to be honest.
Yeah, that is the scene that I always forget about when people watch this.
Yeah,
like, because I'll tell them, oh yeah, it's funny, and then I always forget. The opening is awful.
I understand that because, like, all of those scenes with her, I always forget about it. I forget that there's this whole subplot of Itchy liking the patron from the whorehouse and wanting to help her. But then his way of helping her is being like, now I can beat you up. Now I can be your abuser.
It's legit scary. He's scary in that scene when he smiles and shit. It's freaky.
And he thinks that he's helping and shit. And you just see this terrified, like, girl who's, like, trying to act happy. She's like, yes, thank you for saving me before she, like, so she can grab a baseball bat to try and, like, bash his brain in.
Yeah, which is fair.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing about this movie is, like, I completely understand why people might, like, not from a censorship view, but from, like, a view of, like, oh, this makes them uncomfortable, or they think it might, like, it might not be the best representation of, like, it's not a feminist movie, let me just put it that way.
No.
I can see why that might make people uncomfortable, but at the same time, it's a movie which is very much, and it's a manga that was very much kind of built on, like, taboos and crazy stuff like that. And it's still something that I kind of wrestle with, but I feel like it's kind of needed in the movie because it kind of shows how it's tricky.
I think it's good to have in the film. I think it's really hard to explain to someone who thinks it's just fucked up shit you like seeing because it's fucked up, why you want it in the film. And it's not because, I enjoy seeing this, like, seeing this makes me happy. But as brutal and gross and as uncomfy as it makes you, it does add to the story or it helps you understand something, even if that understanding is just how fucked the characters are.
Yeah, I think maybe you could make an argument for like I don't know, I have the cut version, so I can go without, even though I don't like censorship.
Yeah.
I think I can go without seeing the extended scene of, like, her getting beaten, and that's fine.
Because we realized I just happened to have, like, this weird copy that isn't cut, because you're like, here's all the cut scenes. And I was like,
exactly,
those aren't cut. What do you mean?
Yeah, you have a rare copy.
I got a rare copy. Hey.
Woo!
And so I didn't even realize that those were, like, the no-no scenes. And I understand things make people uncomfy, but my stance on censorship in movies is very, very strong, especially now that we have the internet. Because I am like, if you have a brutal trigger, one, all of these films are like R18. So for starters, you should be enough of an adult to go, oh no, I can see where this is going. I'm going to turn the film off, or I'm going to skip this scene.
Yeah, they explicitly say it. This movie's infamous.
Yeah, I mean, And on top of that, if you do have any really hard triggers, just quickly check online. Be like, does this movie have rape in it? Or does this movie have animal abuse in it? And then, maybe you shouldn't touch this film. And, I mean, It might be different for other film genres because I am very kind of like hyper fixated on just horror.
That's fair.
But I feel like horror is the perfect example because people come to horror to see this fucked up shit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, I think horror should have that. I think horror should have that.
Censorship in horror, if we're going to get specific, just shouldn't really exist.
Exactly. Yeah. My stance on it always will be is like, you can criticize parts of a movie for maybe being like not well handled. You can say, was there any use for this scene? I don't know if this scene was needed in the movie. And there's a lot of instances where that's possible. Like there's a scene in, there's like a cut of like one of the Halloween movies done by, it was a Halloween remake where there's just like a scene of like rape that goes on for like 10 minutes. And it's not needed. It's not needed. And you can watch another cut of the movie that's like the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
And that's a really good version of the movie and it doesn't happen. Yeah. Because there's no point to it. And I can be like...
That's such a long scene too.
Yeah, it's super long and drawn out. It has no point. Like, because in the original cut, there was another reason for Michael Myers escaping.
Yeah.
And in this version, it's because, oh, someone got like assaulted in front of him in an asylum. He got pissed off. So obviously, yeah, that's a silly scene. But I think like... I don't know, I think directly censoring a thing is kind of, unless the thing is like really hateful, but even then if it's really hateful, I think you can kind of pull down a thing where if you censor it, you give it more power. So it's, I don't know, censorship is hard, but I tend to fall on the line of saying like when it comes to horror, just let it be.
Just leave it alone.
If it's a piece of shit movie, this. Don't give it that power. Yeah. Just let it. Just let people watch it.
It's like how a Serbian film got so infamous because that entire thing, or apparently the reason was, you know, it was anti-censorship and like everything. And I've watched it, and you want to know the funniest shit? For a film that's anti-censorship, there's a lot of censorship in it.
Yeah, there is.
I watched it, and I was like, for what this film is about, I've only seen a dick once. Like, what is happening?
It is funny in that sense.
I understand
there is an uncut version, like a mega uncut version of that movie somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's more genitals in it, but I do know it's pretty wild.
I saw the fans of this of a Serbian film, because it does have fans.
Oh, it definitely
has a cult following, man. And let me tell you, you had bad taste if you think this film was good. It's bad. And
like, from what I've seen, like this, like, I don't know. I think the only thing I saw of it was like, oh, cool. The sets have weird tiles and they look spooky and ethereal. Like, that's all I took away from it from when I saw like a picture.
Well, because everyone hyped it up so much and I watched it and I was like, this is like softcore porn, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's the only time when someone calls horror like some type of porn where I'd be like, I'm not going to argue with you on this one.
Yeah,
I'll let that lay because it's basically what this is. But it doesn't show a lot when you consider it's a film about anti-censorship.
And, which is funny.
It got mentioned that an uncut version was getting released. And I saw all of the fans get really fucking pissed off because they were like, this film was made for the intent purpose, cut like this from the director.
And exactly.
To release an uncut one is to go against the director's wishes. And so that was really interesting.
It's an interesting thing, with movies and people who make them. That's a whole interesting thing because you'll have directors who will be like, who will change entire things. Like, I know George Lucas made his own version of Star Wars where... I don't really care much about Star Wars, but he re-released the original movies with added CGI and like scenes completely removed, and you can only find the originals on Pirate Bay. And he's like, "Oh, this is my movie, so I get to give you the only shitty version of it in existence." So it's complicated. It's interesting how that happens with a Serbian film too, because I would think the director would want the uncut version out there. Like, if the whole movie's about like not being censored, wouldn't you love that?
But then from what I saw the fans saying is that the director chose to cut certain parts out for artistic reasons or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
The film's not one I care much about.
I
very much put it into the shock horror category, and once it's over, there's like, I could rewatch it and just be like, oh yeah, okay, yeah. You're doing that.
Exactly. I feel like Itchy has like a lot of moments of shock and stuff, but it also has enough weird shit and just
it's interesting.
Yeah, it has enough like really interesting weird filmmaking and characters and just neat stuff happening that it isn't just about. It is about it, but it's interesting.
I think it has a really special rewatchability to it too, because there's just so much happening. Like it's not a film you could put on like the very next day again.
It definitely
you have to give it some space before you can put it back in the DVD player. But when you do eventually rewatch it, your opinion will probably change again.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
Mine's changed a lot.
Yeah.
And yours from the sounds of it has as well.
Oh, absolutely. Although the one thing that has stayed constant throughout the whole thing is the fact I think Kakehata's cute. And also that the twins are fucking funny. I love them
so much. Yeah. They're little gremlins. They're awful little gremlins, but they are very funny.
It's like when Jito walks in and Hedo's dead, he's like, no, I was planning to kill him later. What are you doing?
That part's so funny. Like he pauses for a minute. He's like, big brother's dead. It's just like when our elder brother died. Yep. And there's no like reaction. He just
there's
like,
no remorse.
It.
He's just like, another one bit the dust, bro.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's so messed up. There's another scene that always cracks me up, and I always tell people about this to kind of give people an idea of the movie.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where Kakehara he's essentially been kicked out of a gang, his own gang, for doing he's getting up to all types of awful mischief.
Yeah.
And the boss is on like a little tiny GoPro or like a little camera, and they're watching him in this bar, and Suzuki, who's just been freshly tortured by Kakehara, is sitting in the background, bandaged up, looking very angry.
Yeah.
And they basically get him, Kakehara, to basically do what they want. He says, okay, I'm quitting.
Yeah.
And he walks out the door, and they're like, oh, that was easy. That was a piece of cake. And you're like, that's very odd. And then Kakehara just pushes open the door again, knocks over Suzuki, who's awfully bandaged up and in pain. He just starts screaming awfully. Yeah. And then he's just like, oh, by the way, I'm taking over the gang. And then it just cuts to the boss on the little like webcam just falling over yet again, while Suzuki is like screaming, and it's like, what the fuck?
It is the funniest shit. That you reminded me in that scene. We are getting close to time, but we'll quickly finish off here.
Yeah.
That scene, when you were talking about your favorite scenes with like this old boss man, that scene's my favorite with him, because when Kakehata stands up, everyone's still so fucking terrified of this guy that they all move backwards.
Yeah.
And then even though he's on a video screen, the wave of like held it up, it looks like he's hiding behind one of the big buff Yakuza dudes, and I'm like, You're not even there in person, bro.
Yeah,
he can't hurt
it's
you.
So funny. Like he ducks and he like moves his head up slowly, even though he's literally being like held on a webcam. And then directly after this, I'll say this super fast. There's this scene where like Kakehara walks out and he's told his boys that they've got the gang back. And he's like, "Does anyone want to leave?" And this little short guy with like long hair, who's been in other scenes, comes up and he's like, "Oh, boss, I think I'd like to leave."
Yeah, yeah.
And he just pulls out one of his big needles and throws it in his leg. And the movie immediately, you think the dude's gonna like scream and be like, "Oh no, I've been stabbed in the leg."
Yeah.
Then the film just cuts to them walking down the street with this badass music, and Kakehara looks like a badass. Everyone looks awesome, and then just at the very end, like of the corner of the screen, you can see the dude limping like really awkwardly.
The needle attaches like this big plank of wood to his foot for a little bit, and he's like limping until it falls out, and he continues going, and I was just like, that's the funniest shit. What are you doing?
It's so inconsequential to the rest of the movie, but it's so funny. But and I love that there's just those little moments.
That weird long-haired guy was one of the bodyguards who was meant to be guarding Kakehara's boss.
That's right. Yeah, he was, wasn't he?
Because, I forgot his name, but the guy with the kid?
Yeah, his name's Kaneko, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's Kaneko.
Yeah. He's like, hey, shouldn't we be guarding the boss? And And the long-haired guy that gets his foot stabbed is like, no. Like, the boss said he'd be fine.
Yeah.
He's in his penthouse. Do you really want to guard him while he's with a girl? Like, just leave it alone. And he seems really pissed with Kaneko. And then, so it's kind of like a very softcore karma in a way that he gets his foot fucked up. Because it's like his fault the boss died so easily.
Exactly. Like, he like roasts everybody, but he's constantly like just like an aloof idiot. Yeah. I'll say one last thing. One of my other favorite characters in this movie who no one ever talks about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because there's just look these weird little moments in this movie that happen and they're never brought up again. It's like this huge dude with glasses who constantly yells the house down whenever, like, he's like the guard dog.
And he, like, rolls his R's a lot. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many R's in your sentences.
Yeah. If you've ever played a Yakuza game or watched a Yakuza movie, he's got, like, I'm obviously not the best person to talk about, like, Japanese language, but that's like in a lot of those movies, they always have, like, that really aggressive, like, like noise.
He
embodies that, and the funniest thing about him is like Kakihara is quite small compared to him because he's huge, but every time he shows up in a scene, like near the end of the movie, this huge guy just gets really terrified of Kakihara as it goes along, and he's like, I don't want to be in the room with this guy. Like, he'll go from screaming to be like, oh shit, I think I'm gonna leave the room.
Sick
of this shit.
Because he's like sitting there, he's one of the most loyal characters to and he's sitting there when they're threatening to cut Longy's dick in half and then repierce it so that he can hold it together with a piercing. He's like, I don't want to be here for this, tell me when it's over, and he just leaves. And I actually really, really like him because he is really loyal. And
he is super loyal.
I love how he goes from that, like, really angry, aggressive, eye-rolling, and then he turns to Kakihara and he's like, okay, we're getting everyone onto it. It'll be done real soon. And I'm like, look at you go, changing your tone of voice.
I know, right? It's so funny. This movie is quite shocking in many ways, but it just has the funniest little moments like that.
Absolutely.
Which just make me love it. It has such a strange charm to it, and that's part of the reason why it's one of my favorites still, I think.
It's definitely a good film, and I don't think I'm ever gonna shy away from enjoying it, no matter what rewatch happens. But we are starting to go over time, so any final thoughts on the film you'd like to give before we jump off?
Yeah, I would say definitely give it a watch if you're interested in the more infamous sort of cult Japanese horror sort of films. It's one of the classics. It's a very odd movie. It might not be everything you expect, but it's definitely an interesting thing. And if you want to see, kind of get more from the story and kind of have a more, even crazier story, try and find the manga by Hideo, I forgot his last name, but find the manga. That's a wild ride too.
Honestly, I would love to own the manga.
Same, yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. I've seen a lot of horrors. I've seen a lot of awful things in movies. Yeah. But even when I was reading the manga, it made me cringe almost all the time through the manga. Yeah, it's a lot to deal with.
The scene where they cut off the girl's nipples always makes me cringe a little bit.
I'm always
like, oh no, the nips. Oh.
I saw that for the first time last night because I only ever saw the cut.
Right, true, yes.
And I was like, oh god, that's brutal. But somehow it wasn't as bad as it was in the manga. And you will find out why.
Oh,
yeah.
that's got me excited.
At least for me, it wasn't as bad as the manga. So I'll be interested to know what you think.
Nice.
Awesome.
All right. my thoughts pretty much run along the same. I think definitely give it a watch if you aren't too against any rape or abuse in your films, because there's a lot of it in this one.
Yeah.
So if that's something that makes you uncomfy, don't touch it. However, I recommend giving it a watch, especially if you've never seen it before, because your first watch of this film will be the most wild one.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have seen it before, maybe it's time to give it another watch and see how your opinion changes on it, or just what little things you missed out, because there's so much going on in this film all the time. But yeah, it's bizarre, it's funny, it's messed up, and it's a good time.
It is. It's a wild one.
It's a wild ride.
Yep.
Anyway, thanks for joining us tonight, guys.
Thank you.
We will be back next week. Before I go, is there anything you'd like to plug, Matt?
Yeah, I have an Instagram called roach_corpse where I make a lot of weird art and a lot of kind of, I wouldn't say similar to Itchy, but kind of weird abstract type stuff. So if you like seeing that, I make comics there. So yeah, check me out there and hopefully I'll be on sometime to talk about more movies.
Heck yeah.
More crazy movies. Oh yeah. Thank you for having me on. It's been really fun talking
about
Itchy.
That's all right. It's one I've wanted to talk about for a while, and I know that you've got some pretty ballin' knowledge on Asian horror, so I was pretty excited to talk with you about it.
Yeah, it's super fun. It's super great. It's such a wild genre.
It is.
Yeah.
At some point, another one I really want to talk about is Tokyo Gore Police.
Yes.
Because that is something.
it's a wild ride.
It's a very wild ride.
It's crazy.
but if you guys enjoyed this episode and want to hear more of just our general horror talks, you can find all of these episodes up on the NPR website, which is npr.nz/show/blockbuster backrooms. And if you like me and want to see some of the stuff I do outside of Talk Horror, you can find me across most social media as Shit I'm an Artist. That's IMMA, because that's how I speak, so that's how I like to write it out. And yeah, thanks for joining us. We will talk at you next week. Have a good night, guys.
See ya.